Chapter 32. Now ladies, up in the sky parlor. Only once a year, if you please. Apostrophe apostrophe young lady with brass ladle. Sweep sweep SWEP. Apostrophe apostrophe illegal watchword. The 1st of May. There is a merry freshness in the sound, calling to our minds a thousand thoughts of all that is pleasant in nature and beautiful in her most delightful form. What man is there, over whose mind a bright spring morning does not exercise a magic influence carrying him back to the days of his childish sports, and conjuring up before him the old green field with its gently waving trees, where the birds sang as he has never heard them, since where the butterfly fluttered far more gaily than he ever sees him now, in all his ramblings, where the sky seemed bluer, and the sun shone more brightly, where the air blew more freshly over greener grass, and sweeter smelling flowers, where everything wore a richer, and more brilliant hue than it is ever dressed in now. Such are the deep feelings of childhood, and such are the impressions which every lovely object stamps upon its heart. The hardy traveler wanders through the maze of thick and pathless woods, where the sun's rays never shone, and heaven's pure air never played. He stands on the brink of the roaring waterfall, and, giddy and bewildered, watches the foaming mass as it leaps from stone to stone, and from crag to crag. He lingers in the fertile plains of a land of perpetual sunshine, and revels in the luxury of their balmy breath. But what are the deep forests, or the thundering waters, or the richest landscapes, that bounteous nature ever spread, to charm the eyes, and captivate the senses of man, compared with the recollection of the old scenes of his early youth? Magic scenes indeed, for the fancies of childhood dressed them in colors brighter than the rainbow, and almost as fleeting. In former times, spring brought with it, not only such associations as these, connected with the past, but sports and games for the present, merry dances round rustic pillars, adorned with emblems of the season, and reared in honor of its coming. Where are they now? Pillars we have, but they are no longer rustic ones. And as to dancers, they are used to rooms, and lights, and would not show well in the open air. Think of the immorality too. What would your Sabbath enthusiasts say, to an aristocratic ring encircling the Duke of York's column in Carlton Terrace, a grand poussette of the middle classes, round Alderman Waithman's monument in Fleet Street, or a general hands four round of 10-pound householders, at the foot of the obelisk in St. George's Fields? Alas! Romance can make no head against the riot act, and pastoral simplicity is not understood by the police. Well, many years ago we began to be a steady, and matter-of-fact sort of people, and dancing in spring being beneath our dignity, we gave it up, and in course of time it descended to the sweeps of fall certainly, because, though sweeps are very good fellows in their way, and moreover very useful in a civilized community, they are not exactly the sort of people to give the tone to the little elegances of society. The sweeps, however, got the dancing to themselves, and they kept it up, and handed it down. This was a severe blow to the romance of springtime, but it did not entirely destroy it either, for a portion of it descended to the sweeps with the dancing, and rendered them objects of great interest. A mystery hung over the sweeps in those days. Legends were in existence of wealthy gentlemen who had lost children, and who, after many years of sorrow and suffering, had found them in the character of sweeps. Stories were related of a young boy who, having been stolen from his parents in his infancy, and devoted to the occupation of chimney sweeping, was sent, in the course of his professional career, to sweep the chimney of his mother's bedroom. And how, being hot and tired, when he came out of the chimney, he got into the bed he had so often slept in as an infant, and was discovered and recognized there by his mother, who once every year of her life, thereafter, requested the pleasure of the company of every London sweep, at 1:30, to roast beef, plum pudding, porter, and sixpence. Such stories as these, and there were many such, threw an air of mystery around the sweeps, and produced for them some of those good effects which animals derive from the doctrine of the transmigration of souls. No one except the masters thought of ill-treating a sweep, because no one knew who he might be, or what nobleman's or gentleman's son he might turn out. Chimney sweeping was, by many believers in the marvelous, considered as a sort of probationary term, at an earlier or later period of which divers young noblemen were to come into possession of their rank and titles, and the profession was held by them in great respect accordingly. We remember, in our young days, a little sweep about our own age, with curly hair and white teeth, whom we devoutly and sincerely believed to be the lost son and heir of some illustrious personage, an impression which was resolved into an unchangeable conviction on our infant mind, by the subject of our speculations informing us, one day, in reply to our question, propounded a few moments before his ascent to the summit of the kitchen chimney, that he believed he'd been born in the Vercus, but he'd never known his father. Apostrophe we felt certain, from that time forth, that he would one day be owned by a lord. And we never heard the church bells ring, or saw a flag hoisted in the neighborhood, without thinking that the happy event had at last occurred, and that his long-lost parent had arrived in a coach and six, to take him home to Grosvenor Square. He never came, however, and, at the present moment, the young gentleman in question is settled down as a master sweep in the neighborhood of Battle Bridge, his distinguishing characteristics being a decided antipathy to washing himself, and the possession of a pair of legs very inadequate to the support of his unwieldy and corpulent body. The romance of spring having gone out before our time, we were fain to console ourselves as we best could with the uncertainty that enveloped the birth and parentage of its attendant dancers, the sweeps, and we did console ourselves with it for many years. But even this wicked source of comfort received a shock from which it has never recovered, a shock which has been in reality its death blow. We could not disguise from ourselves the fact that whole families of sweeps were regularly born of sweeps, in the rural districts of Somers Town and Camden Town, that the eldest son succeeded to the father's business, that the other branches assisted him there, and commenced on their own account, that their children again were educated to the profession, and that about their identity there could be no mistake whatever. We could not be blind, we say, to this melancholy truth, but we could not bring ourselves to admit it, nevertheless, and we lived on for some years in a state of voluntary ignorance. We were roused from our pleasant slumber by certain dark insinuations thrown out by a friend of ours, to the effect that children in the lower ranks of life were beginning to choose chimney sweeping as their particular walk, that applications had been made by various boys to the constituted authorities, to allow them to pursue the object of their ambition with the full concurrence and sanction of the law, that the affair, in short, was becoming one of mere legal contract. We turned a deaf ear to these rumors at first, but slowly and surely they stole upon us. Month after month, week after week, nay, day after day, at last, did we meet with accounts of similar applications. The veil was removed, all mystery was at an end, and chimney sweeping had become a favorite and chosen pursuit. There is no longer any occasion to steal boys, for boys flock in crowds to bind themselves. The romance of the trade has fled, and the chimney sweeper of the present day is no more like unto him of 30 years ago than is a Fleet Street pickpocket to a Spanish brigand, or Paul Pry to Caleb Williams. This gradual decay and disuse of the practice of leading noble youths into captivity, and compelling them to ascend chimneys, was a severe blow, if we may so speak, to the romance of chimney sweeping, and to the romance of spring at the same time. But even this was not all, for some few years ago the dancing on May Day began to decline. Small sweeps were observed to congregate in twos or threes, unsupported by a green apostrophe with no my lord, to to act as master of the ceremonies, and know my lady, to preside over the exchequer. Even in companies where there was a green it was an absolute nothing, a mere sprout, and the instrumental accompaniments rarely extended beyond the shovels and a set of panpipes, better known to the many, as a mouth organ. Apostrophe, these were signs of the times, portentous omens of a coming change, and what was the result which they shadowed forth? Why, the master sweeps, influenced by a restless spirit of innovation, actually interposed their authority, in opposition to the dancing, and substituted a dinner, an anniversary dinner at White Conduit House, where clean faces appeared in lieu of black ones smeared with rose pink, and knee courts and tops superseded nankeen drawers and russeted shoes. Gentlemen who were in the habit of riding shy horses, and steady-going people who have no vagrancy in their souls, lauded this alteration to the skies, and the conduct of the master sweeps was described beyond the reach of praise. But how stands the real fact? Let any man deny, if he can, that when the cloth had been removed, fresh pots and pipes laid upon the table, and the customary loyal and patriotic toasts proposed, the celebrated Mr. Sluffin, of Adam and Eve Court, whose authority not the most malignant of our opponents, can call in question, expressed himself in a manner following. That now he'd cotched the chairman's eye, he wished he might be jolly well blessed, if he weren't a goin' to have his innings, which he vold say these here observations that, how some mischievous coves as knowed nothing about the concern, had tried to sit people agin the master swips, and take the shine out o' their business, and the bread out o' the traps o' their precious kids, by a making o' this here remark, as chimleys could be as well swept by scenery as by boys. And that the makin' use o' boys for, that their purpose was barbarous. Various, he had been a chummy he begged the chairman's pardon for using such a vulgar expression more, nor 30 year he might say he'd been born in a chimley and he knowed uncommon well as scenery was thus nor o' no use. And as to cruelty to the boys, everybody in the chimley line knowed as well as he did, that they liked the climate better nor nothing as vos. Apostrophe from this day, we date the total fall of the last lingering remnant of May Day dancing, among the elite of the profession. And from this period we commence a new era in that portion of our spring associations which relates to the 1st of May. We are aware, that the unthinking part of the population, will meet us here, with the assertion, that dancing on May Day still continues, that greens are annually seen to roll along the streets, that youths in the garb of clowns, precede them, giving vent to the ebullitions of their sportive fancies, and that lords and ladies follow in their wake. Granted. We are ready to acknowledge that in outward show, these processions have greatly improved. We do not deny the introduction of solos on the drum. We will even go so far as to admit an occasional fantasia on the triangle, but here our admissions end. We positively deny that the sweeps have either part in these proceedings. We distinctly charge the dustmen with throwing what they ought to clear away into the eyes of the public. We accuse scavengers, brickmakers, and gentlemen who devote their energies to the costermongering line, with obtaining money once a year, under false pretenses. We cling with peculiar fondness to the custom of days gone by, and have shut out conviction, as long as we could, but it has forced itself upon us, and we now proclaim to a deluded public that the May Day dancers are not sweeps. The size of them, alone, is sufficient to repudiate the idea. It is a notorious fact that the widely spread taste for register stoves has materially increased the demand for small boys, whereas the men, who, under a fictitious character, dance about the streets on the 1st of May nowadays, would be a tight fit in a kitchen flue, to say nothing of the parlor. This is strong presumptive evidence, but we have positive proof, the evidence of our own senses. And here is our testimony. Upon the morning of the 2nd of the merry month of May, in the year of our Lord 1836, we went out for a stroll, with a kind of forlorn hope of seeing something or other which might induce us to believe, that it was really spring, and not Christmas. After wandering as far as Copenhagen House, without meeting anything calculated to dispel our impression that there was a mistake in the almanacs, we turned back down Medenlin, with the intention of passing through the extensive colony lying between it and Battle Bridge, which is inhabited by proprietors of donkey carts, boilers of horse flesh, makers of tiles, and sifters of cinders, through which colony we should have passed, without stoppage or interruption, if a little crowd gathered round a shed had not attracted our attention, and induced us to pause. When we say a shed, apostrophe, we do not mean the conservatory sort of building, which, according to the old song, Love tenanted when he was a young man, but a wooden house with windows stuffed with racks and paper, and a small yard at the side, with one dust cart, two baskets, a few shovels, and little heaps of cinders, and fragments of china and tiles, scattered about it. Before this inviting spot we paused, and the longer we looked, the more we wondered what exciting circumstance it could be that induced the foremost members of the crowd to flatten their noses against the parlor window in the vain hope of catching a glimpse of what was going on inside. After staring vacantly about us for some minutes, we appealed, touching the cause of this assemblage, to a gentleman in a suit of tarpaulin, who was smoking his pipe on our right hand. But as the only answer we obtained was a playful inquiry whether our mother had disposed of her mangle, we determined to await the issue in silence. Judge of our virtuous indignation, when the street door of the shed opened, and a party emerged therefrom, clad in the costume and emulating the appearance of May Day sweeps. The first person who appeared was my lord, apostrophe, habited in a blue coat and bright buttons, with gilt paper tacked over the seams, yellow knee breeches, pink cotton stockings, and shoes, a cocked hat, ornamented with shreds of various colored paper, on his head, a bouquet the size of a prize cauliflower in his buttonhole, a long belcher handkerchief in his right hand, and a thin cane in his left. A murmur of applause ran through the crowd, which was chiefly composed of his lordship's personal friends, when this graceful figure made his appearance, which swelled into a burst of applause as his fair partner in the dance bounded forth to join him. Her ladyship was attired in pink crepe over bed furniture, with a low body and short sleeves. The symmetry of her ankles was partially concealed by a very perceptible pair of frilled trousers, and the inconvenience which might have resulted from the circumstance of her white satin shoes being a few sizes too large was obviated by their being firmly attached to her legs with strong taped sandals. Her head was ornamented with a profusion of artificial flowers, and in her hand she bore a large brass ladle, wherein to receive what she figuratively denominated the tin. Apostrophe, the other characters were a young gentleman in girl's clothes and a widow's cap, two clowns who walked upon their hands in the mud, to the immeasurable delight of all the spectators, a man with a drum, another man with a flageolet, a dirty woman in a large shawl, with a box under her arm for the money, and last, though not least, the green, apostrophe, animated by no less a personage than our identical friend in the tarpaulin suit. The man hammered away at the drum, the flageolet squeaked, the shovels rattled, the green rolled about, pitching first on one side, and then on the other. My lady threw her right foot over her left ankle, and her left foot over her right ankle, alternately. My lord ran a few paces forward, and butted at the green, apostrophe, and then a few paces backward upon the toes of the crowd, and then went to the right, and then to the left, and then dodged my lady round the green, apostrophe, and finally drew her arm through his, and called upon the boys to shout, which they did lustily, for this was the dancing. We passed the same group, accidentally, in the evening. We never saw a green so drunk, a lord so quarrelsome, no, not even in the Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.